Let's talk about something that might be keeping you up at night, cybersecurity. According to Vanta's latest State of Trust report, it's the number one concern for UK businesses. That's where Vanta comes in. Whether you're a startup, growing fast, or already established, Vanta can help you get ISO 27001 certified and more without the headaches. And Vanta allows your company to centralize security workflows, complete questionnaires up to 5 times faster, and proactively manage vendor risk to help your team not only get compliant, but stay compliant. Stop stressing over cybersecurity and start focusing on growing your business. For a limited time, our audience gets $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off. Because when it comes to your business, it's not just about keeping the lights on. It's about keeping everything secure.
Hey, everybody. JJ Cooper, Savannah McCann, another of these Baseball America MLB Prospect Deep Dives. And today we are talking about the Washington Nationals, an organization that has undergone a full rebuild, but we're actually seeing the signs here of like, okay, this is what a rebuild's supposed to be like. This is the thing I would say more than anything is if you're going to trade a player like a Juan Soto, you got to hit on the trade. We saw this with the Red Sox. They traded Mookie Betts, and we're looking at a few years later, and they don't have anything left from that. You look at Juan Soto, Savannah, we'll kind of jump in. We're going to get into number one prospect real quick, but before we do that, you look at that Juan Soto trade right now, and you can look all around the diamond and say, ah, here's a guy they got back for Soto.
I mean, it's incredible the way the Nationals got a prospect haul that has really worked out in almost every single facet of it, which is crazy. You have Mackenzie Gore in the rotation. You have CJ Abrams, who's your everyday starting shortstop. You have James Wood, who is James Wood, which is incredible in and of itself. You have Harlan Susan. I mean, you've got amazing prospects, and when you just keep adding them one on top of the other, you're like, oh, they got this guy and this guy. Like, they fleeced them.
Harlan Susanna.
Yeah. I mean,
we're going to talk about Susanna today. I mean, it just keeps coming.
It's the future of the organization and then some, multiple times over, which is you don't normally see an organization do that well in a trade. And the Nats, I think, can pat themselves on the back for this one and say, okay, so far, so good. This is looking great.
And again, that is hard to do. You could say, well, you're trading Juan Soto, you're getting it, but no, we've seen this over and over. We've seen many a times where a team trades one of the best players in baseball, and you look back on it, and the return was bleak. But this is where the Nationals are, and this is still a system that is still – James Wood has graduated. Mackenzie Gore has graduated. CJ Abrams has graduated. But – the number one prospect in this organization is still one who was a top of the draft pick just a couple of years ago. Teammates with the number one pick, Paul Skenes. I don't think Dylan Cruz is going to be Paul Skenes. Nothing against Dylan Cruz, but Paul Skenes is that good. But number one prospect, Dylan Cruz, who did reach the majors at the end of last year, Savannah, as you were working on the 30, putting all this together, he had kind of one of those years where it's like, could have been better, but also there was a lot of things he did do well. As you kind of sit here now, the thing that I like about it, looking at it, is they don't need Dylan Cruz to be the foundation piece of this team. He's got one of those right next to him in the outfield in James Wood. They need him to be a great wingman. And the skills he kind of has kind of fit with that. What did Dylan Cruz show? Let's start with the positive. What did Dylan Cruz show last year and goes into this year? Where what are the things that he could do for this national team in the short, medium, and long term?
Off the diamond, talking to Dylan Cruz, he's a professional. And I think that comes from playing in the SEC. You're playing at LSU. You're playing alongside Paul Skenes. He's a professional, and he already emotionally and mentally trains that way, thinks that way, and is able to move on very quickly. And that's something he's so mature for, even you think he's still very young. So that's been so impressive to watch. Of the adjustment mentally wasn't a huge toll on him. And he already got to Washington and looked like a professional, the way he carried himself, the way he talked to the media. That was incredibly impressive, if you ask me. And then the things he did on the field, He flashed every single tool that he has. I mean, it's a lot of expectation Dylan Cruz had. And I would say, sure, we didn't see it consistently. Of course, there's things he can work on, but we saw all of his tools. We saw him be exceptional at the plate, in the outfield, as a teammate. I mean, we saw all of the tools. So if that doesn't get you excited about the future, I mean, I don't know what more he can do besides show you that in a couple months, I am the guy that I am promised to be. Watch.
Okay, so now I want to also hit the, there are also the caveats.
Of course. And I mean, no one's going to be perfect.
But I will say, like, the thing we, the things that I would say were concerns before about Dylan Cruz that have become more, like, we saw, okay, he knows going into 25, I got to recognize sliders better, for one, right? Like, that is one where it's like, this, but I would say that right now, the question more than anything is okay, he's going to get on base, we think. He should be able to hit for average. How much impact is in there? Like, or is the swing a little bit more geared towards getting on base and hitting for average than power? How do you kind of see that balance now and then kind of going forward?
It was definitely the question mark at the end of the season of, okay, when is he going to hit that explosive ball? We saw it in college. And of course, there's going to be times that you need to adjust from college ball to the pros at every level of the minors too. But you're playing with a metal bat now. You have a wood bat. You know, how is that going to translate? And we need to see him adjust his bat path a bit. Like, he needs to get the ball up in the air more. He struggled with that, but he recognized that. And that's the biggest thing with him, is that he knew what he was doing wrong. And I think this offseason, he's added a bunch of strength and he's working on that. So when he's focused on that, I do think the Nationals are aware this is what we need to do. And honestly, as a prospect, as a young guy, like, that's just some growing pains. Now, if we don't see it at the end of this season, then it becomes the question, where is Dylan Cruz's power? But it will come. We saw flashes of it, but he just needs to elevate the ball a little bit and make better swing decisions of, okay, I know I can hit this. I'm going to juice this ball out of the park because I can do that.
I do also think, like, again, this is where the Nationals kind of set up nicely here. The emergence of Jacob Young last year kind of puts them in a position. You're right. Upset makes the point. Like, Cruz can play center field, but sure, with this team, he's not going to play center field if Jacob Young is, you know, is out there also, because Jacob Young is really good in center. But the thing that kind of looks at the long term here is you've kind of got three guys out there who should all be able to cover a lot of ground. But like you said, you mentioned, like, he flashed it in the outfield, but tools wise, like, I mean, are we talking above average plus defender in a corner? Like, is that kind of his long-term home, plus defender in center? Or is that asking a little too much, or, you know, how do you kind of perceive it?
I think he could play center field. The Nationals believe he could play center field and he could be an all-star caliber player in center. However, he profiles best in the corners. That's where he's going to play, especially when you have a guy like Jacob Young, and the Nats have so much outfield depth behind all of them. So when you have elite players and then you have Jacob Young, who should have had a gold glove, in my opinion, he'll get there this season, I'm sure. So when you have that kind of talent, keep Dylan Cruz in the corner. That's where he will shine. He's great over there. And right now the chemistry between those three guys, like you said, it's an elite outfield that is so young and exciting that you can't ask for much more from them. And defensively, you see Dylan Cruz get a little bit more aggressive, and he knows Jacob Young has me covered in center field. So I just got to man my territory, and I can do that. And I can make those spectacular plays.
This is going to be a really interesting year, because for one, like, if you're looking at this right now and saying, who are your candidates for National League Rookie of the Year? Dylan Cruz kind of stands out from the standpoint of, he has a job largely kind of like, that's yours. Like, it's not a question of, oh, is he going to play somewhere? It's like, no, he's going to play in the outfield every day. So you've got that. And then you've got the pedigree of, you know, a guy who was one of the best players in college baseball for multiple years. You know, now again, do it, but at the same time, there is this part of like, okay, but you got to hit, you hit 218, 288, 353 last year. We're going to have to see more. Hopefully that was kind of that little taste, that little teaser that gives you the idea of what you need to work on for year two effectively. But like, should we be thinking of him as like, I guess, what would you say is like at the end of this year? I kind of feel like if he hits 250, 340, 380. I'm not going to be upset with that. That's not what you want to see long-term from him. But if you saw that as a 23-year-old, that'd be like, okay, he's on the right track. What do you kind of see?
I'm not asking him to set the world on fire this season. That'd be incredible if you want to watch him, you know, hit 280 and go off. But that's okay. Like you said, if he hits 250 this year and he shows that he's improving, and if even if it comes with a little less getting on base but more power, that's a step in the right direction, in my opinion. Watching him develop and show that I worked on this and that's now paying off. I'm now hitting more home runs. And sure, I'm getting a little bit more aggressive, but he needs to get a little bit more aggressive. He kind of did it at the end of the year, but getting a little bit more aggressive isn't always a bad thing, especially when you have the pedigree of I can tone down the aggression when I need to. So I'd like to see that from him. So maybe he does strike out a little bit more this year, but I'm okay with that.
So that's the number one prospect. The battle at two to see who's going to be number two is between a pair of pitchers, and it's a really interesting debate. If you enjoy this, by the way, do check us out, baseballamerica.com. There are reports, Savannah's reports on all 30 Nationals' top 30 prospects with BA grades, scouting grades, and then an additional 10, 31 to 40, basically, beyond that because we couldn't stop at 30. We also have the top 100. We have the Fantasy Dynasty 500. We have the RoboScout Top 100 for all your fantasy content, all your rankings that you need to get ready for your Dynasty League or your Sim League or whatever it is. And also college coverage, draft coverage, baseball card coverage, everything you need at baseballamerica.com. Join the subscribers who are devouring this every day. And we thank you to our subscribers for doing that. But as we dive into kind of that 2-3, I kind of feel like this is one of those, we talk about this several times on these deep dives. There are rankings where it's, that was number one, and that's number two, and that's number three. And there's other ones where it's like, that guy's two, and that's 2A. Is Travis Sikora and Harlan Susanna a 2 and 2A, or was there kind of a clear little bit of a distinction there?
Every single person I talked to putting together this top 30 had those two guys ranked differently, but it was either 2 or 3, and they are right there. It really just depends on what you like better out of a pitcher or how well you think Susanna is going to be able to develop if you think he's going to be a starter. And that was the biggest question mark with him, to kind of dive into him. Harlan Susanna before was a surefire closer. He was going to throw 100 miles per hour. He was going to be your closer, and he was going to be incredible. Now he's pitching deeper into games. He's able to keep his velocity up during games. His cut slider got a million times better this season, and he showed a little bit more control as well. So you're seeing all of these development steps that you go, wait a second, you might actually be a guy in the middle of the rotation here, and you could stay there long-term versus you're definitely heading to the bullpen. I talked to a scout who said, you know, before it was 70-30, 70% he's going to the bullpen, 30% he sticks. Now they flipped that in their rankings of him of, okay, now 70% he's sticking in rotation, 30% he's going to the bullpen. So with the numbers, you have to think to yourself, okay, I guess you might stay in the rotation, and that means I'm going to rank you higher, and maybe you are the number one prospect in this organization.
The thing that stands out to me about Susanna, a couple things that happened last year. One, like you said, this is a guy who, when we talk about premium velocity, he has the ability to maintain a level of velocity that very, very, very few pitchers in pro ball can. But the second part I would say also, like you said, that cut slider, he's really transformed as a pitcher. And I give him a lot of credit on this. And I give the Nationals credit on this too. Like, this is the guy who had a four seamer that wasn't always playing to its velocity, but now that he's got this two seamer, he's got this cut slider, he much more looks like the guy who can dominate, you know, who can just sit there and mow through a lineup. We kind of really saw, like, if you just look at his overall stat line last year and you're like 3-3, 4.18, 230 batting average against, 1.25 whip, okay, 37% strikeout rate, 9% walk rate, that part's really good. You're not really getting the full impression of this because that second half, he had a 9 ERA, and then it went to a, you know, basically being one of the best pitchers in the minors the second half. So, but he's three. So I kind of feel like that's a natural segue to say, so how is Travis Sikora? This is the guy who throws, who I think touching 103 already in spring training. And he's behind Sikora, mm-hmm. which says something about Sikora. What did you see? What stood out about Sikora in 24 and looking ahead to 25 and beyond?
Travis Sikora is also hitting premium velocity. I mean, he hit 99 miles per hour last season. So you know he's not touching triple digits or 103. It's assuming that, but 99 is nothing to, you know, look down on. So he has premium velocity. He took a huge step forward with his control, which was a major thing that was a question mark around him. How was Travis Sikora's control? Was he going to be able to improve that? And he did. So watching him do that, and while he's doing that in the postseason and he's leading his team and leading that rotation in the Atlanta League Championship game, you're kind of seeing him take a huge step forward as a leader, as a player, and as a pitcher. So when you put all that together, there's less reliever risk with him. You really do see a spot in a big league rotation for a guy like him. Ultimately, that's what it came down to for me when I decided, okay, I got all the feedback, who's two, who's three. I see Travis Sikora 99% as a starter, where I do see it 70% with Harlan Susana.
I do love a Texas high school pitcher. You know, like that is kind of a demographic that that teams love to go back to. And Sikora, again, you can say, oh, he's a third rounder. Yeah, he got way more than third round money. This is another of the flamethrowers coming out of Round Rock, that area. And basically, credit to him, but also credit the Nationals that this is a guy who looks like a really good pick just a couple years later. The other thing, you mentioned it, like, dominating the playoffs, two playoff starts, one hit, no runs allowed, and struck out nine, basically, in the Carolina League playoffs. Now, you know, again, that's not the World Series. I don't want to make it sound like this, but it is the playoffs. Teams want to win, and he really did dominate. I would say that this year is going to be interesting for him. We'll see this with Susana also, but like, okay, both of them, I would expect that we're going to see what these guys can do at some point this year, Susana earlier than Sikora, but I wouldn't be shocked at all to see both of them at some point pitching in Double A this year. Pitch, and then that's going to be kind of, that's the one thing with Sikora. He was perfectly age appropriate for it, but all year in Low A last year, expect he'll start in High A, but you kind of hope that we're seeing him in Double A at some point this year where you're like, okay, he hopefully, for his sake, basically at some point says, okay, the South Atlantic League has given me everything it can, and I've shown I can handle this. I don't think that's an unrealistic, kind of hope. But although, again, I will say Susana is the case of a guy who spent all last year in High A, but he had a little bit rocky. We're hoping, if you're Sikora, you're hoping you have a little bit smoother April and May, I would guess, than Susana did.
Oh, yeah. You're hoping to see both of these guys take step forwards at higher levels this year. So we watch that early in the season, see how they do. And we should see both of these guys rocket through the minor leagues, so long as they continue to do what they did the second half of last year.
That's now when we say, like, okay, there's one. I think it was a clear one. There's two and 2A. Yeah. And then I would say we're now to a next tier, right? Like, there are a couple of position players to talk about here that we really want to dive into, including one who has reached AAA. But they're in the second. They're in that next tier. But we'll talk about them right after this quick break.
Let's talk about something that might be keeping you up at night. Cybersecurity. According to Vanta's latest State of Trust report, it's the number one concern for UK businesses. That's where Vanta comes in. Whether you're a startup, growing fast, or already established, Vanta can help you get ISO 27001 certified and more without the headaches. And Vanta allows your company to centralize security workflows, complete questionnaires up to 5 times faster, and proactively manage vendor risk to help your team not only get compliant, but stay compliant. Stop stressing over cybersecurity and start focusing on growing your business. For a limited time, our audience gets $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off. Because when it comes to your business, it's not just about keeping the lights on. It's about keeping everything secure.
And we're back. So Savannah, what is a, Brady House has kind of had a little bit of a roller coaster of a pro career already. He's had He's battled injuries, you know, that really kind of led to kind of a struggle in 2022. He then had a really good 23, and I would say 24 kind of was a little bit in between. He showed some power also at the upper levels. Like, you know, there are questions how much average is he going to hit for. But what is a realistic, like, timetable for Brady House? And, I mean, when I do look at this Nationals team, it really would help things for them, I would say, in the short, medium, and long term, if Brady House can be an answer in the infield. Fair?
Absolutely. The Nats are looking for their everyday third baseman, and they need somebody in that role yesterday. So Brady House is very much in the conversation to break camp with the Nats. They've said that if Brady House is ready, it is his job. However, Brady House didn't make the best case for himself without showing a bunch of power last year. Power is Brady House's calling card, and we keep waiting and waiting and waiting for it to come. And it came a little bit last year. I mean, you got to see a little bit of power from Brady House, but
for
a guy
that
was supposed to be this, yeah, nothing to scoff about, but you're hoping you see a little bit more out of Brady House, and you're hoping his defense, which did take a step forward this year, which has been great to see for the Nationals, for him developmental-wise, but Brady House was supposed to be this power-hitting third baseman that gets on base, does everything, and he just hasn't lived up to those expectations quite yet. And I think there are other people in the organization that are vying for that third base job that may get it if Brady doesn't reach the majors by the end of this season. I don't expect Brady House at all to break camp with the Nationals. He will start his season in AAA, prove himself, and work to get up there. But I think there are plenty of people in the organization that think I could do that. And I think there's a player in Caden Wallace that could and might.
The thing that stands out to me is you do watch what teams do. And again, I don't blame the Nationals at all for kind of having plan A, plan B, and plan C. But they did go out and they acquired Paul DeJong after they'd already signed, they signed Paul DeJong after they'd already signed Ahmed Rosario. So they do have a pair of what I would describe as, I don't think either of those guys is going to stand in the way if Brady House or Caden Wallace basically knocks down the door and says, I'm your third baseman. But they absolutely do stand in the way if you don't claim that job. Like, they have at least now plausible options. And I say that because if you said, well, I mean, obviously DeJong's played a lot of shortstop in his career and all, but CJ Abrams, I know, you know, there was a rough end of the season there, but CJ Abrams is your shortstop. And Luis Garcia is your second baseman. Those two positions, short term at least, are kind of settled, I would say. You want to see improvements, especially in Abrams' case, you know, like a little bit more consistency, defense, all that. But there are backup plans there. At third base, I would say, you know, you probably throw Jose Tena in there, you know, as well. There's a number of guys who you would say, this is a plausible option if Brady House needs some more time. You hit on it, then I wanted to get to that. Like, and now, one of the things the Nationals did last year, you know, they brought in Alex Clemmie in a deal. They brought in Caden Wallace, the former Royal. What does that mean? Like, Caden Wallace and Brady House, this could end up being kind of, and do we need to include Seaver King in this discussion as well, as far as the infielders? Like, if we're talking about who are the infielders in the Nats infield in 2026 and beyond, there's a little bit more competition, I feel like, there now.
There's a bunch of competition. I would say before, it was Brady House's job to lose at third base. They just were kind of waiting it out. Let him get a little older, let him get some reps, and then he's going to take over. That's not the case anymore. He definitely has competition to become the Nats' everyday third baseman. He could still get there, but he's going to have to fight Caden Wallace for it. And then you have Seaver King, who is so athletic and so talented. He's going to be a guy this season I'm really excited to watch. He was a little slower at the end of the last season, to be expected. He played a whole college year. So to watch his explosiveness this season and what he is capable of, what we saw at the college level, that puts him right in the mix of, okay, how do we get him in our lineup? Because you're going to want a guy like Seaver King playing for you every day. So there's a lot of competition coming up, which is a good problem for an organization to have. Because at the end of the day, sure, it was Brady House's job, but that goes away because a team wants to win, and the Nats need to win. We are now getting to the point where it's time that, you know, these losing seasons ever since you won the World Series, not going to work anymore.
That's the perfect segue to the next question I want to ask you, which is, so where is this? Like, this has been a long rebuild, right? I mean, this has been multiple years here, but where would you say, where do you perceive that this rebuild is now? Like, and I say that because it felt like a better 71 wins last year. They equaled their record from 2023, which is not progress. Like, on the pure wins and losses, that was not a step forward. But at the same time, graduating a James Wood, seeing Mackenzie Gore take steps forward, Luis Garcia, you know, like, okay, this is, you know, who's still really young. There's enough there to be like, okay, there are some steps. But, okay, when does 71 turn into at least, is 81 like a realistic goal for this year? Or is that like, no, we're not ready? Because the Nationals, I would say about the offseason, it's hard to say that they did not spend this offseason saying, hey, we really feel like we're really primed to take a big jump. And because we're ready to do that, let's go out and spend in free agency like they have before at times. They still kind of, they worked around the edges more, I would say, if that's fair. Where is this team now? Is this team like aiming for 26, 27, or is 25? Like, where do you see them as right now?
I see this season as the answer season. So by the end of this season, I do think they maybe get a few more wins, maybe 78. If let's get crazy and say they win 80 games this year, you know, that'd be something. It'd be an improvement, but it's not doing anything great. You're still not contending. But if you can get answers by the end of this season, who is in your starting rotation? You have a bunch of guys, young guys that you might be able to work in there. DJ Hers, Mitchell Parker, you have Mackenzie Gore, you have Cade Cavalli. What's the status with him? You have a bunch of question marks there that needs to be figured out. And you brought back Trevor Williams. I don't see Trevor Williams being the answer long-term, but you brought him back this year. Is he in your term, in your plans for 26? Probably not. So let's figure out the rotation this season. And then who's your starting third baseman? Who is going to be added to this lineup that gives you more run production? That was one of the biggest issues for the Nats last year, is they could not put runs on the board, and they especially couldn't do it when it mattered. So taking that step forward this year, who's going to be the guy that adds pop to the lineup? Okay, figure that out. So then by 26, that's the season the Nationals are going to contend again. It might just be for a wild card spot. I don't think they're going to be able to contend with the Phillies and the Braves just yet to take the division, but you're contending for a wild card spot, and they've seen how well they do from a wild card spot very recently. So it is possible. 26 is the season they're going to contend. 27, that's going to be the season that, watch out, this Nationals team is scary. I think scary good.
That's what we'll have to see. Because again, like, they still have, I would say, if I was going to say on that, what needs to happen for that to happen in 27, obviously James Wood needs to be James Wood, just keep getting better. That's kind of a cornerstone guy. CJ Abrams, you know, we could talk about, again, Dylan Cruz. That's a great start. Okay, well, where's Keibert Ruiz? Like, is Keibert Ruiz going to be an average regular? Great. If he can be an average big league catcher, that's fine. It's going to be above average. That'd be great. But we don't know that. We don't know, like you said, like with the rotation, like, okay, I feel you can be reasonably comfortable about Mackenzie Gore at this point, but you said Cade Cavalli, Mitchell Parker, DJ Hers. There's a number of these other guys where some of them have shown flashes, many of them have shown flashes, but we don't know, okay, are they going to be able to do it consistently? There is still like that. And then that's where, like, if you're even talking about for 26, the other thing I would say with this is, okay, now that you know where the strengths and weaknesses are, then how aggressive are they going to be to plug those externally as well? Because again, you mentioned Trevor Williams, we mentioned Paul DeJong, we mentioned Ahmed Rosario, you know, we should mention Josh Bell's back, but you know, Nate Lowe, but this is not a team that went out and said, oh, we're going to bring in a $20 million, a five war player type. They were more of like, we're going to add some pieces here. That to me is going to be what's interesting to see, especially in a division. We know that the Mets, they're really going to spend. They've already done it. They signed Soto. We know that the Braves are committed. You know, they've already committed a ton of money to a ton of players who are there. And in many cases, they're stars. Know that the Phillies, they're going to, this is the division. We know that the Marlins probably won't, but this is the division that's going to be tough to compete with in that way. Before we wrap this up, the other thing we always love to do on this is, okay, we got the top 10 and we've talked about many of those top 10 prospects, but we always love to kind of dive in a little bit also to players beyond the top 10. Is there a player or a couple of players that really jump out to you? It's like, keep an eye on this one because we'll see something maybe down the road.
I do. I have a couple players that are interesting for either good reasons or bad reasons. Good reason, Kevin Bazell, catcher. He is somebody that I'm very excited about. And I think the Nats organization is quite excited about too. He hasn't been catching very long. It was something he just started doing full time. But he has an ability that I think great catchers are born with. It's a personality, it is a steadiness, it's a calmness that I don't know if it can be taught or how that gets taught. He was calling Travis Sikora during these big postseason moments. And Travis Sikora, who's a guy that gets fired up, Kevin Bazell immediately calmed him down. Hey, relax. This is your moment. You've got this. We're going to do this. And the game calling was incredible for someone who hasn't been catching that long and hasn't been calling games his entire life. It was a veteran move from a young guy. And I think you can teach certain aspects of catching and you can teach certain aspects of hitting, but that innate ability that kind of came out of him in the big moments, that kind of made me and other people stop and, oh, okay. When you're wondering who's going to be your everyday catcher, does Keibert Ruiz have that? Do other catchers in your organization have that? Maybe not. So he's someone I'm excited about for sure.
Okay, you said you had there a couple, are some so other I'll names. Keep you going.
Yes, okay. So we'll talk about the good before we get to what we have to talk about. Two outfielders I'd like to touch on the good. Robert Hassel and Andrew Pinckney. You know where the bad's going. Yeah, I think everyone's waiting for that conversation because it has to happen when you talk about the Nats. But two good prospects. You have Robert Hassel. And you have Andrew Pinckney. These are two guys that I think are going to be competing for that fourth outfield spot. They've both taken steps forward. I actually picked Andrew as one of my sleeper prospects to watch. I think he could really rise through this organization pretty quickly. Robert Hassel has been a guy who just can't stay healthy. And I'd love to see a healthy season out of him because he was trending in the right direction and seemed like the guy that was going to be that fourth outfielder and then gets hurt again. And he's taking it in stride. He's doing well mentally. But physically, is he able to compete? So that's something to watch this season. From him, Andrew Pinckney could take over that spot. And then you say, okay, well, we found our fourth outfielder who's a great bench guy. He can come in and clutch situations and hit. But I'm excited to watch him this season. But the star of the show, the question mark of all question marks, is Elijah Green. What the heck is going to happen with Elijah Green this season? And we're all watching and holding our breath because it's not getting better at the plate. Defensively, it's getting better. He's great defensively this year. It was a massive step forward for him. He's improving. You're watching him develop. And then it's at the plate, and it's like he's never swung a baseball bat before, and he's striking out every time.
I would say, I mean, at this point, look, again, we root for prospects, but you have to be more skeptical than optimistic when a 2022 draftee is still striking out over 40% of the time and doing it in low A. I mean, let's just be honest about it. But at the same time, as you said, it's also a player who there is every reason to give Elijah Green every opportunity because he has his defense is major league caliber. And when we say major league caliber, like we're talking plus defender, like one of the better outfield defenders in the game, right? We're talking about a guy who can really run. We're talking a guy who can throw. We're talking about a guy who hits the ball when he connects as hard as almost anyone. We talk about five-tool players. Elijah Green has four tools. Those are four really good tools. But the problem is the tools are not even, you know, they're just not. And the hit tool is more important than probably the other four. You know, it's the most important tool. And okay, so let me ask you again, we saw some minor improvements, but
minor.
When you talk to Nats officials, in the ideal scenario, what has to happen for Elijah Green to make, we're not talking about, you know, a guy who's going to strike out 100 times. He's going to strike out 150 times. If everything goes perfectly, we're talking about a guy who strikes out 150 times a year, but that allows him to hit 230, 240, to get to the power, to play the defense, all that. But what does he have to do to get to that?
That's the biggest question mark is, first they worked on the mental side with Elijah Green, because this is a kid who his entire life has been gifted. And he has been incredible his entire life. So this is the first time he's really starting to see struggle. And it started taking a toll on him. And you could see he would strike out often and was getting extremely frustrated. And that would ruin an entire game for him. There was no chance. If he struck out in his first at-bat, he was not going to hit the ball the rest of the game. And that's not productive for anybody. So this season, that was something they really worked on of you need to let each at-bat go, because as a major leaguer, you're going to strike out. You are going to swing and miss, and it's going to whiff, and it's fine. Move on. So he's learning to move on, which is the first step. It feels like you're teaching hitting 101. Like, we're starting at step one, let it go. Okay, we've gotten to that point. Now, be less aggressive. You do not have to try to swing for the fences at every single pitch. And that's been the next thing they're working on with him. And he is seeing a slight improvement with his pitch recognition. And he's starting to be a little bit less aggressive at the plate, but you're still seeing him strike out, like you said, 150 times. And that's just not...
We're seeing him strike out 206 times.
Excuse me, 206 times this guy.
We're hoping for 150. That's the goal.
That's the fingers crossed, 150 times. So that's the problem, is that he's swinging for the fences every time because he knows when he makes contact, it is earth-shattering contact, and that's not an exaggeration. But the Nats don't need him to be this guy that you're either striking out or hitting a home run, and he needs to learn that. And it's slowly learning that and understanding what type of guy he is versus what he's been allowed to be thus far into his life. I actually had a Nats official, we were talking, and they said, I don't think anyone's ever worked on his swing with him before because they were so afraid to ruin him. Which is fair. When you have a guy that is so talented from a young age, you don't want to be the guy that messes him up. But now you have a kid that's so raw that just, oh, I can hit a ball really hard. Watch. Swing and miss. Oh.
I would say a rebuild is well in order at this point. You know, just from the standpoint of, again, you can't strike out big. You, if you strike out 200 times in the minors, you're not going to get, you know, an opportunity to play in the majors. You have to, in that way, it is a meritocracy. But again, the tools are really loud there still. It's going to, you know, again, we root for prospects. We don't want to see guys struggle, and Elijah Green has a long way to go, but the tools, the defense, the speed, the power do stand out. That's a lot of guys that we covered. You know, on another of these deep dives. Thank you for joining me, Savannah. It is always a pleasure. And if you enjoy these, there's a ton more. We are almost done with our 30 deep dives. We're covering, I keep the questions like, are you going to do the Nationals? Yes, we're doing the Nationals. We're doing all 30 teams. You know, we're covering every major league organization. We are almost done with that. And if you check out, we have a playlist of all the ones we've done so far. When you're watching this, by the middle of next week, we should be done with the final of our 30 deep dives. For Savannah, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.
Let's talk about something that might be keeping you up at night. Cybersecurity. According to Vanta's latest State of Trust report, it's the number one concern for UK businesses. That's where Vanta comes in. Whether you're a startup, growing fast, or already established, Vanta can help you get ISO 27001 certified and more without the headaches. And Vanta allows your company to centralize security workflows, complete questionnaires up to 5 times faster, and proactively manage vendor risk to help your team not only get compliant, but stay compliant. Stop stressing over cybersecurity and start focusing on growing your business. For a limited time, our audience gets $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off. Because when it comes to your business, it's not just about keeping the lights on. It's about keeping everything secure.